the top, go get 'em.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are a progressive politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about the Trans Mountain Expansion Pipeline, Bill C-21. And if we have time, we'll check up on the situation in Venezuela. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Ajit, welcome.
Hello.
You're going to start off the show for us this week with some troubling news,
right,
to put it lightly. Some very, I would say, I think it's fair to say, pretty racist legislation coming out of Quebec.
Right. Well, it's a bit of a change of pace here, right? Instead of you leading with a monologue, we're going to dive right into this, this recent update right now. So I'm going to use, as a reference point, this Global News article. It's by Maham Abidi, and it's federal response to Quebec's Bill 21 disappoints, but then Trudeau spoke up. I wonder why. So pretty much what...
Probably thought he was losing part of the vote, huh?
Oh, exactly. He can't lose Quebec. I mean, And so what it says is federal leaders are being criticized days after the passing of Quebec's Bill 21 by advocates who were hoping for a stronger response to the controversial new law. Advocates say the leaders should have spoken out directly after Sunday night's passing of the controversial bill, which prohibits some public sector workers from wearing religious symbols such as hijabs, turbans, and kippahs. Balpreet Singh from the World Sikh Organization of Canada said the federal leaders should have come out strongly against the bill. Quote, "It's all very strange and something you wouldn't expect in Canada, and the strong reaction we expected from our politicians has not been there," end of quote, Singh added. And then I think it said, "I think we've checked the box, they've made their position known that they don't like this, but this should be denounced, it should be challenged." So essentially what this is doing, it's, obviously it's passed by the provincial government in Quebec, right? Which we kind of have an idea. It's,
They have a very reactionary premier.
Right, exactly.
They're premier racist.
And even culturally, socially, outside if, you get outside of Montreal and outside of some of the big cities, maybe on the border with Ontario, it's a very... I don't want to use the word backwards, but they're very conservative, I guess, or reactionary, the term you use, which is better, right?
Yeah.
Because they really buy into this narrative that their country is being taken from them, because they've always had an inherent insecurity, Francophones have, that they got to fight for their rights to maintain their national identity. And a lot of concessions have been made along the way to where they are their very own kind of sort of unique state, right, or province rather, but this again, it doesn't come as a surprise in terms of supporters who would be individuals or, you know, have finding Francophone or Quebec supporters of this bill, but what is surprising is that, you know, again, it's coming in 2019 in a period where, you know, Quebec went very widely liberal, right, for Trudeau in the most recent election, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Again, that's probably not an indicator of, you know, social values, really. But so what I find troubling about this is that it's public sector, right? So it's different if it's private, because those are private businesses. But most of those businesses, private ones, wouldn't really delve into this type of issue, because what are they're most worried about their pocketbooks. And I mean, governments are worried about their pocketbooks too, but at the same time, they're also worried about PR and making sure that their policies are aligned with their core voters, not the general mm-hmm. Electorate, but just their core voters. And, you know, it's troubling, even more specifically for individuals like me. You know, like, I have a turban, and it's part of, like, kind of my religious requirement, you could say, for people who choose to be more orthodox to their faith, right? So that's the same people who wear hijabs, you know, Muslim women, and kippahs, which, you know, you also find among more orthodox Jewish people, right? And there's large populations of those people in especially the Montreal area, which is, I mean, I think it has about nearly half of Quebec's population. Mm-hmm. So this is targeting very significant, you know, socioeconomic segments of Quebec's society, right? And I think it was the biggest public sector organization, which is, I think, the Montreal Teachers Union, and the teachers organization is, you know, vehemently against this. They're like, we're not in support of this, because they got teachers who, you know, are sick, who wear turbans or are Muslims.
Yeah, God forbid people are exercising their religious freedom.
Right. And it's a democratic society.
Open society.
So open society, as we're right to believe, right? No religious persecution. And do not a lot of the Francophone people like to really cry foul over being persecuted as Catholics in Canada?
Yeah, that's the levels of cognitive dissonance and talking out both sides of your mouth.
Right.
And, like, playing the victim is just so... It's on so many levels. That's why it's such an infuriating bill. And, right, like, you know, as someone that doesn't have any religious, like, I'm not particularly religious.
Right, right.
But I have solidarity with people who want to express their religious freedom mm-hmm. and now are being, like, targeted by hate, pretending, like, because what this is all rooted in, at least in my opinion,
right,
is this turn in, like, in right-wing politics where, you know, it just demonizes people who have... Like, it's rooted in, like, that 9/11, like,
right,
just absolute, like, hyper-Islamophobic.
Exactly.
You know, everybody with a turban.
Right.
Even though it's, you know, they're conflating Sikhs with Muslims.
Right.
And regardless, none, like, the entire broad population is not, you know, hateful. These are not, you know...
Absolutely.
It was specifically Saudi Arabia and like, CIA, Mossad, you know, adjacent operatives that committed this. So, it's deeply political, but instead, you know, rather than blaming on the people who actually, you know, had a hand in 9/11 and, mm-hmm. you know, caused this, like, crazy amount of Islamophobia,
we
are in 2019, 18 years later,
right,
where it's just everybody religious ever is the problem and has nothing to do with imperialism, and everybody who's especially brown skinned, but anybody that expresses their religion needs to be persecuted by the state.
Needs to be persecuted, especially these what's the term? Oriental religions, which we don't really get. Well, what are they?
Not like those good Western religions.
There's only one.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Or two, actually, Judeo-Christian, excuse me. But Jewish people are being persecuted too through this. So, you know, maybe. But
And the Zionists take a step back because the Zionists are like, oh, that's okay. They need to go back to Israel anyway.
Right, exactly. And with
really disgusting how like the right wing kind of comes all together on this.
I know. It's, hey, they can find solidarity on in their hatred, right?
Very
maybe,
bizarre.
Maybe we progressives should, you know, follow suit in a more appropriate, and you know, something which actually deserves hate.
Like, yeah, real solid. Yeah.
Economic inequality. Like, yes, that's what I mean. Let's not individuals, that. Systematic oppression.
Yeah.
But the article continued. It said, Prime Minister JT's office did not offer a new comment, only stating that his position on the topic is known and has not changed. Global News was instead referred to statements made by cabinet members on the issue since the bill's passing. And it's pretty obvious that, you know, Trudeau, he's become sort of a meme for hyper tolerance of certain cultural aspects, right? And of course, that's again playing on fears of Islamic religion and you know, the whole you know, the whole East-West War of Civilizations type of thing. But again,
which in and of itself is such a bizarre, you know, idea that, you know,
right,
Justin Trudeau, this guy that, you know, is has his hand in U.S. imperialism as well as Canadian imperialism,
right,
you know, has this love affair with Islam.
Right.
It's just so screwed up.
It's very, yeah.
It makes no sense.
Right. And kind of like the irony of the situation is that this the bill's really detrimental because to be a practicing Muslim, an Orthodox Muslim, doesn't really require too many visible signs of your religion, right? As opposed to Sikhism, right, which requires the turban, right? So that's really where the issue comes out. For, you know, again, it's hating on a religion just for being a certain religion is just pure bigotry.
And for like fitting that visual, and it's just so like,
exactly,
it's an archetype, right? It's like scary
brown, you know, guy with a turban and a beard.
Must be a terrorist,
right? And he must be Muslim.
Even though all the terror attacks committed here are by, you know,
right-wing extremists, right?
That are also
Christian terrorists, right?
And white skins.
And
so,
yeah, right.
I mean, like, beyond all that.
Right. It's you know, the more worrying issue is challenges like this to individuals' religious sovereignty has been, unfortunately, somewhat commonplace in Quebec, right? It's just part of their history. You know, as it's nothing unique either. But what the greater concern is, right, Quebec was also the site where that horrible mosque attack
happened. The first world mosque shooting. Or are they, no, North American. North American. So even before the United States. The worst of the worst. They just tried an attempted bombing. That was the difference.
That's right.
One got killed there.
Right.
But yeah, and I think it's just this doubling down and just this, and I believe at least it's the scapegoating of you know, Sikh people,
fears.
Really.
Right,
like, let's be honest. Like, that's the majority of these people. And Muslim women.
Right.
More than it is. Because, like, and I think it just shows just how, just how it's just guttural hatred. It has nothing to do
with. It's uncritical, yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Right.
Other than if you, you know, demonize these people and just want to punish them and, you know, take all the problems that, you know, monopoly capital, which is what we're dealing with here, where, you know, a few companies own everything.
Right.
There's a state of permanent war since World War I.
Right.
And you know, ecological collapse is about to happen.
Right.
But let's blame these people that had nothing to do with anything.
Right. Exactly. It's total scapegoating, and it's gonna signal to the general public, some very bigoted, racist people who live in maybe suburban or rural society, that, you know, it's okay to actively persecute, demonize, verbally abuse, you know, people who are essentially your neighbors who've been there for decades. And again, it's like, what's the wider point that we're playing on? Is that it's a scapegoat of demographic fears that their country is being taken from them.
Yeah, totally, like, crazy. And I went down that white nationalist rabbit hole, and a lot of their theories really depend upon the fact, and it always roots in Jews, which I think is like so
well, that's the original stupid. That's kind of their original demographic fear, right?
Yeah.
Is that this small, tiny population controlling so many resources.
Yeah, and now it's, you know, now they're replacing, you know, like, they really, like, they believe that George Soros is trying to replace white people with people of
with
color.
Muslims or whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's, that's what I think, and it only further, like, It's kind of, you know, and this is not a an argument, you know, just comparing these people to the Nazis, but like, you know, when it comes to Nazi ideology, a key to it was, you know, we make almost, you know, reality, we create the situation that we believe,
right?
You know, like they put those policies into effect to prove their own
point.
Yeah. That's why they started like rounding up all the Jews, because that's what they believe. So they just would just go off of it, regardless of any actual like evidence or facts about it. And that's kind of like what's happening here. Once again, they're not Nazis. I'm not saying Quebec is not. I'm saying Premier Legault is, you know, Adolf Hitler. But
no.
It's the same kind of idea, though, of you're just going to go do it regardless of any kind of reality to the situation.
You breed the thoughts. You breed the cultural environment. You know, it's already existent. Like we
it's
say,
like pretty totalitarian if you think about it. It's where it's like you're just trying to shape humanity to your own, or shape human society to your own image.
Right.
Which is that all the world's problems, which brown people cause none of, are all of a sudden brown people's problems.
Exactly. And perhaps the most twisted thing was, and the same thing which happened in Nazi Germany, is that Jewish people, the same thing with situations with Muslim and sick individuals in, you know, in this instance in Quebec societies, is that are well integrated into it. They're not trying to introduce, they're not trying to impinge on Catholics' rights to practice their
quite
religion.
Frankly, we like people of color are ghettoized in Canadian society. They're completely separate.
Right.
So yeah. This is just super like white insecurity being taken out on brown people.
It is, right?
Yet again.
And it's exactly. And you know, they, and what's the main thing? It's like, you know, you it's always in the urban centers, right? It's like this rural fear of the urban taking over, right? You know, the same, it's like Montreal. They don't seem that as like a good place. They see it as, you know, tolerant beyond appropriate limitations, I guess they would say. And I guess, you know, public sector is even more telling, because they're like, we don't want these people controlling our provincial resources, because that was their
controlling, right? Like, so just like this total inversion of reality,
right,
where it's
right.
Like you're not allowed to do the jobs of the state, carry out state functions because of, you know, your hijab.
Exactly.
It's just so out there.
Right.
But that's where we're at politically. Like the right wing is so, you know,
paranoid.
Well, yeah, like just delusional, I think.
Right,
yeah,
right,
I don't
right.
even know what kind of words to describe these people, where they just live in, you know, and I think personally, you know, this is what happens when you live in a world of the spectacle, you know, where everything is, where, you know, reality is too much.
Right.
You know, imagine bringing these people down and explaining to them like, hey, you know, we have a state of permanent war, environmental collapse, and, you know, we're looking at economic collapse, financial collapse as well. You know, like, no. I'm going to go back to my crazy, you know, rebel media, Canada Proud Facebook group, Yellow Vest Canada Facebook group, People's Party of Canada mentality, where it's brown people are causing all the problems.
Exactly. And it's the whole point. It's like the real enemy is, like, you know, economic collapse, impending economic collapse, right? Wages haven't gone up for these people, like, past inflation. Inflation has outcompeted their wages,
for four decades.
Four decades, right? And, you know,
almost half of people are $400 away from financial insolvency.
Exactly. It's like, you don't really know how lucky you are until you hear a statistic like that.
Yeah.
But these people live, like, 5 miles away from you, 10 miles away from you, 20 miles away from you, right? It's the two Canadas thing, right? Just as every country, there's these two competing demographics or socioeconomic groups.
Well, and then it's not just two, you know, we have another layer to it. You mentioned at the beginning, you know, how French society was always being crushed by Anglo-Canadian society, which is true. There's always been that conflict.
Absolutely.
But lest we forget, you know, where are we, right? We're not in Europe anymore, right? We're, you know, on stolen land. So there's that another level of, I think, just that inherent racism that comes, and racial superiority that, like, feeds into it. White supremacy, right? That comes from living on stolen land. And being a colonizer.
Exactly.
So I feel like it's hard to, you know, a lot of people like to cry, you know, economic insecurity. But I think it's because it's, you know, when people say it's like, oh, it's race or economics, I'm like, well, it's not one or the other. It's
both. Right.
Well, it's both at the same time, because, you know, we have an extremely economically unequal society.
Right.
Period. There's employers, employees. There's two castes right there.
Mm.
Right. That's, you know, I don't know what to tell you. There's two classes.
Right.
That's what exists in society. Then on top of that, you have stolen land. So you have, you know, colonizers and colonized.
Right.
So I feel like, you know, just those two constantly interplaying off each other you know, give rise to these issues where, you know, things get tough in Canada, blame brown people.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, they don't, and again, this is playing off of fears of, you know, Trudeau's cabinet. It's like half are women. There's a lot of colored people, you know, minority individuals.
A lot of brown people around.
Right, exactly.
That must be why things are going bad.
Right, right.
Which is probably the extent of their analysis.
Mm.
There's more women and brown people in government, thus, you know, that's why things are bad. Things just turned bad in 2015.
Right, exactly.
I think it's like, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, where like liberals think in 2016 the world went to shit
because right.
Trump got elected. It's like it's like Trudeau derangement syndrome, where right wingers think that the world went to shit in 2015 because Trudeau got elected.
Right.
It had nothing to do with all the other stuff that's happening. Like in the entire history of humanity played nothing into it. It just started in 2015.
It's like its own isolated. No, don't be ridiculous, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, the world didn't just, you know, you weren't born yesterday. It's the same thing which applies to history.
Yeah.
And maybe just a few more statistics, which are somewhat disappointing. It said an Angus Reid poll from that same article conducted in May showed that about 2/3 of Quebecers support the bill at 64%. 43% of Quebec respondents also believed it would be appropriate to fire those who disobey the law from their jobs. The same percentage of respondents say it would be inappropriate, while 14% are unsure. But, however, 48% of Quebecers also believe the bill would have a negative impact on relations with minorities and the government. But outside of the province, support for the bill is notably lower. 52% disapprove, while 37% approve, which, you know, it's a bit disheartening. But again,
Not surprising.
It's exactly what we've been talking about the whole time, right? It's, yeah. And it just shows in the numbers.
Well, with that disappointing news, we're going to have to take a short break for commercials. Stick around. We'll be right back after that.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Are really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
The perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
City Council? School Board? Parks Board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office. The newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer Latu Show. Okay, so moving on. I'm sure this has made international headlines, right? And we're dealing with the effects at home.
Mm-hmm.
The headline from CBC News written is, Trudeau Cabinet approves Trans Mountain Expansion Project. Yes, people, the thing we feared has finally come true. Federal officials say construction of the $7.4 billion pipeline is likely to begin in 2019. This was written by John Paul Tasker, posted June 18th, 2019. Happy belated birthday to me, right? You know, this is what I get for my birthday.
That's right.
Is the TMX project.
He was doing it just to spite you.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it, Trudeau. Okay, so the article reads, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his cabinet have again approved the Trans Mountain Expansion Project, a crucial next step for the much-delayed pipeline project designed to carry nearly a million barrels of oil from Alberta's oil patch to the BC coast each day. The cabinet has affirmed the National Energy Board's conclusion that while the pipeline has the potential to damage the environment and marine life, Okay, that could happen. I guess those things could be bad. It's in the national interest and could contribute tens of billions of dollars to government coffers and create and sustain thousands of jobs. Beyond approving the project, Trudeau also committed to directing every single dollar the federal government earns from the pipeline, which, when it's built, is estimated to be some $500 million a year in federal corporate tax revenue alone to investments in unspecified clean energy projects. So, end quote. Okay, lots to dissect there. So the National Energy Board, we could destroy, you know, the environment, that thing we need to live, and marine life, that thing that supports.
We got 10 years, we're fine.
Yeah, whatever, take your time, not a big deal. But then also, national interest. So what does national interest mean? The interest of the oligarchy that control our country. So that's what the national interest is. So before anybody says, you know, it's in our interest, it'll be in the interest of the people who are extracting billions of dollars in profits coming out of tar sands money and that dirty bitumen, then they kind of offset it with jobs. And we'll go through and dissect it, because the way I see this, Ajit, we've been covering environmentalism on this show quite a bit. And the way I see it is that there's a lot of right-wing talking points that need to be interrogated.
Right.
There's a lot of left-wing talking points that need to be interrogated.
Which also need to be.
And then there also needs to be, you know, what the state is saying. I would just say, in general, like the establishment center, like straight down the middle, exactly what, you know, keeps capital happy and keeps the domestic...
And gets some of the votes.
Yeah, gets enough votes from the population, keeps them pacified. You know,
right.
Just like, it seems like it should make sense. Like, that's basically that. So
Basically
what we're looking at here, people, is every single option that's on the table is a horrible option.
Right.
And I think that the Trans Mountain Expansion Project is horrible news. Ajit, what was your reaction when you heard TMX was coming through you?
It was total political opportunism, right? It's the election is looming. Mm-hmm. It's looming large. And Trudeau is well aware that, you know, his current track record has a lot to be criticized by his political opposition from both the left and the right. You know what I mean? That's what he's worried the most about. And it wasn't a surprise.
And so which way in the spectrum does he fall? Right?
Right. He's more...
He's going to the right.
He's going
to the
right.
That's where he's going to.
Exactly. He's not socially. He'll never go socially right. But economically, that's where he wants to get those voters, right?
Because I'm socially liberal.
Right.
But economically conservative.
Okay, right.
That's this to like the Patagonia wearing people.
Right.
They're like, oh, it'll be spent on clean energy.
Huh.
Oh,
absolutely.
God.
Absolutely. Because that's how it works.
Yeah, because that's the problem with climate change. Okay, so before we get to that, let's discuss the jobs. So that's all you hear from these people is jobs, 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 jobs. That's all they have to say back to it. But like, let's even just think about it for a second here. So a multinational corporation, Kinder Morgan, right, who's, you know, who sold it to the Canadian state.
So now
we all own the pipeline. It's become a public sector project.
Right.
And now the proceeds, the surplus value, goes to the state, right?
Right?
So it's not like these people are getting, you know, much for it. You know, they sell their lives away. They work these dangerous jobs for, you know, good, obviously good money out there in the oil patch, but nothing like, not worth the chains that you live in. But because you live in a privileged segment of society, you know, at the height of the labor aristocracy. So, you know, you're not like the 7-Eleven convenience store workers, you know, who are being persecuted in Quebec right now.
Right.
Right? So all the people of color working in the service industry, working the low paying jobs, are at the bottom of the labor aristocracy. And the reason why it's a labor aristocracy is because we live off of the imperial plunder of the third world, which gives us this abundance of goods and overpriced stuff that we can afford here.
Right, consumerism.
Yeah, that feeds that rampant consumerism. So now the people at the top are, you know, the white privileged workers that generally do the work in, you know, for resource extraction and the like. So that's, you know, they're at the height of it where they're making more money than everybody else. So they just don't really see, they don't really care how the cards fall as long as they're getting there. So, but to that point, even if, you know, we're going to take the jobs argument at face value, which, you know, we shouldn't. Well, let's take a look at, you know, Jason Kenney's corporate tax giveaway.
Right.
So Jason Kenney, you know, this is some research done by Press Progress. His bold plan of slashing corporate taxes by 4%, even though Alberta already has lowest corporate tax rates, he's claiming that it'll create 55,000 jobs and grow the economy by $13 billion. So, and which is total BS, because you know, under both, like, our two major parties, liberal and conservative,
right,
corporate tax rates were slashed by 16.6%, and all that happened from it, you know, there's no more jobs. All that the money goes into is the corporation's pockets.
Right, exactly. It flows upwards. They can hire a marginal amount of more workers. It's not going to be 55,000. It might be 5,000.
And why would they spend all that money on us when they can just put it in their pockets?
Right, exactly.
We've done this so many times.
Right, and the two-headed dragon of, like, automation and cutting taxes, it's horrible. It's like the workers getting squeezed from both sides.
Yeah, seriously. So now we live in such a backward society that people fear, you know, not going to work.
Right.
Because that's how horribly distributed resources
are. Oh, screw your mental health, screw your physical health, just do that same repetitive task.
I need that, yeah, I need to be in the factory line, I need it.
Right.
Like, no, you don't. I thought that was the point, to not work ever again.
Right.
And, you know.
Or just don't work yourself to death.
That's, you know, and that's all we have in this world, is what people are, you know, actively choosing to do, which is why we live in an inverted totalitarian state where, you know, rather than it coming from the top down, it comes from the bottom up.
Right. We do it to ourselves, literally.
Yeah. Well, because we have the most reactionary people that, you know, get into this. The same people that are screaming jobs and slash the taxes and build the pipeline are also the same people, ironically enough, crapping on people with religious headwear.
Headwear, so, yeah.
That's where we're at with the right wing of Canada. So, you know, once again, this combination of these horrible projects like TMX plus the horrible economic policies, you know, cause not only wealthy elites to get a lot richer, the new jobs obviously aren't going to be there. Jobs are going to go down from what happened from the conservative liberal when they were in control for the last forever.
Right.
You know, GDP goes down no matter what. Like, the amount of taxes is not what's causing financial growth to cease. What's causing that is the fact that we live on a planet with finite resources,
right,
but with an economic system that presupposes infinite growth.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right, right, right.
That's the problem. So,
and instead of, you know, one of the great quotes from The Wire, it's that, you know, the guy's saying, we used to build stuff in this country. Now we just put our hand in the other guy's pocket. And that pocket is the middle class's pocket. And they're making money off us because we had a giant pool of wealth. That's how, you know, these North American Western countries originally got rich, right? Post-war boom.
Well, you know, as we covered on this show, that's partially true. But right, we also have to pair that with world wars, because that's really what jump-started the...
Right, exactly. We had a lack of competition, right? So the middle
monopoly
class...
Monopoly capital, right, builds up.
Right.
You know, that we bomb monopoly capital, right, into smithereens. We bomb them back to the Stone Age.
Right.
And then the middle class appears. So rather than do that again, mm-hmm, you know, which is why we need to be very skeptical of the left wing as well, because the left wing, a lot of this, you know, they're co-opting the good socialism that, right, you know, that change that we need to transcend this economic system is being co-opted to, oh, let's do World War II again.
Right, 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 right.
Let's not do World War II again.
No.
Let's remove the chains that the imperialists have put on us, the monopoly capitalists, and instead move into, oh, sorry, Spencer, it's not a monopoly. There's four companies. Okay.
Okay.
Oligopoly.
All right.
And move on to a new system. However, the new system being proposed by both the center and the left,
mm-hmm,
right now. So if we go back to the article, sale proceeds go to green projects. This is from the CBC article. Any proceeds from the eventual sale of the pipeline will also be earmarked for projects that would help with the transition away from fossil fuels to cleaner sources of energy. Oh, wait, I also totally forgot. They're looking to sell the pipeline to somebody.
Hmm.
Right? That's the plan with the pipeline. It's not that.
Really? So we bought it just to sell it?
Yeah.
It's like a real estate flip.
Or it's like when it's all like those bailouts where Canada bought out GM shares and sold, right, them for billions of dollars in losses.
Right. Mm.
So they're just using the public to subsidize. And once again, this is, you know, socialism. People are like, oh my God, Spencer, socialism is so scary. I'm like, oh, we live in a socialist country.
Absolutely.
It's socialism
Co-opted
for the rich.
Socialism, right.
Well,
right.
So, socialism for the top 1%, you mm-hmm. know, where the public, you know, completely subsidizes every move they make. Then why do you think they never lose? There's a bank bailout. Right. There's a Bombardier bailout.
It's neoliberalism, essentially. Right?
Yeah, it's you loot, you know, steal from the poor and give to the rich.
Right.
And so, you know, once... So they're
Hood Robin.
Yeah. Hood Robin, not right. Robin Hood. Oh, I love that. Okay, so yeah, so the sale go to green projects, you know, that's supposed to be the crumbs for the peasantry, you
it's
know.
It's like the Green New Deal type, right?
Yes, so right. we're getting into very sketchy territory, to say the least. So they're saying that the eventual sale of the pipeline will go to cleaner sources of energy. This is Justin Trudeau. We need to create wealth today so we can invest in the future. We need resources to invest in Canadians so they can take advantage of the opportunities generated by a rapidly changing economy here at home and around the world. Trudeau said building the project, building Trans Mountain Expansion, will help deliver Canadian oil to Tidewater for shipment to lucrative markets in Asia, will ensure Canada is not dependent on selling its natural resources to one customer, the United States. As we've seen through the past few years, anything can happen with our neighbors to the south, Trudeau said. Right now, we're prisoners to the American market. So, a lot to get into here. This is a myth. We've right. covered this before, but I think this is a good time to go over that. So, the Asian market for Alberta's oil is a myth. This was written by James Wilt, April 19th, 2018. So this is from the Narwhal, amazing news source for climate change news. Highly recommend. James Wilt writes about the, you know, the whole, oh, you know, and you hear every conservative commentator say it. So this is like a big, you know, big talking point.
It's their primary talking point in a way.
Yeah, so this is their big scheme. So you can even tell them that, you know, the facts, which, okay, I guess we should get to that. So here's the problem. Canadian producers already have the ability to ship their heavy oil to Asia via the existing 300,000 barrel per day Trans Mountain pipeline, mm-hmm. but they're not using it. Virtually no exports go to any other markets than the U.S., which is what Trudeau alluded to, and economist Robin Allen says. The entire narrative perpetuated by Prime Minister Trudeau and then Alberta Premier Notley, total fabrication about the whole China thing, because in 2017, the Port of Vancouver only shipped 600 barrels of oil to China. That's less than a tanker load. That same year, the port shipped almost 13 million barrels of oil, or about 24 Aframax tanker loads, to the United States. So, you know, once again, like, this is it doesn't matter, even if the Trans Mountain expansion is already built, because they're still selling it. And it's not going anywhere. It's not right. going to Asia. It's only going to the United States. And even if you call conservatives on this, I heard this coming back from this is what they say to that, is that they're, oh, but we want to get a better deal on the global market. Because once you have, you know, you could hypothetically,
options, yo.
Yeah, I can sell it to more people right. so I can ask for more.
No. So they can buy it from as many buyers as they like.
Yeah, that's. It just to get into the cognitive dissonance, here's more from the article. Quote, there's no appetite in Asia for heavy oil, said Eoin Finn, former partner at KPMG, in an interview with DSmog Canada. They don't have refineries to refine it, and the world is swimming in light sweet crude that's cheaper and easier to refine and altogether more plentiful. Another challenge is that the Port of Vancouver can't even physically fit the size of tanker required to economically compete with the other shippers of oil to Asia.
Right.
So
what's really the point then?
There's none, because and to get even worse, pipelines are pipelines' own biggest, you know, problems. So right. check this out. TransCanada spill in South Dakota responsible for the current discount, because as we all know, the main reason that Alberta is currently experiencing a larger differential than usual, around $25 a barrel, is because TransCanada's Keystone Pipeline spilled almost 10,000 barrels of oil into a South Dakota field in November 2018, the third incident from the pipeline since 2010.
Right.
So you could basically see the moment when the spill happened on differential estimations, increasing from $11 a barrel in November to $25 a barrel in February.
Right.
So they're losing money because the pipelines are not only so poorly built, but it's a stupid, you know, system to even rely on fossil fuel extraction.
Right.
And not just regular fossil fuels, but our crappy bitumen oil, which requires a massive processing, massive procedures to even make it sellable, and massive government subsidies.
Right, exactly. And why would one pipeline dictate the global price of oil and cause a shift in it? It doesn't, right? That's out of our hands. It's... again, it's like we're going to be selling it to the states at a cheaper price anyways, because they produce a lot domestically as well, right? So their whole point is not to buy it from us at a more expensive price as it is. It's because our currency is lower. And that's, I think, what they're trying to exploit, really, I think, is this low ball currency that we're at. You know, I think that was a real big win for the owners, because you can export way more, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to sell it to China. I mean, you could, but like, we sold them 600 barrels. I mean,
yeah, if they really, so there it is. It's not that we don't have the pipeline. We have the pipeline.
We have one. And why would ramping up production be like, oh, okay, we're,
this we is have better. Even more of that thing you don't want.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Like, you know, what is this? Is
you
like,
want this car? No, you want two cars.
What's funny, if you just change the players around and you made this like country A, country B, country C, and tried to do this in a, like, in the worst of the worst places, if you did this in a solder school of business classroom,
right,
you know, people would just like laugh at them and being like, oh, that's so stupid, how, you know, you dumb, you crazy liberal, like something horrible
right.
being said about them. But it's, you know, that's basically what's happening here. It makes absolutely yeah. no sense,
right?
Yet here we are. So I don't even know.
And it's interesting how we,
where to go with this.
It's interesting how we pick and choose the geopolitical issues too. It's like, oh no, China, be very afraid. But we want
China's
to sell oil.
So China's, you know, always the butt of these things. China's right. the problem.
Right.
China's the solution. Yeah. Pick one.
Right.
Pick one,
right.
Either China's our best friend or it's or not.
You want their dirty money or yeah. do you not?
Oh, their dirty money is ruining our world, ruining our country. Right. Oh, no, we need their dirty money to keep the pipeline going. Right. It's hard to pin down where these people are at. We've got to take a short commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news, as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
What's up, everybody? You're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show. So we are discussing the Trans Mountain Expansion Pipeline. We're looking at an article from CBC News. This is by John Paul Tasker of CBC News. Article is posted June 18th. This is about the approval of the Trans Mountain Expansion. So we spent the last 20 minutes discussing the right-wing opinion on this. I guess we should wrap up our discussion with the right-wing climate change plan, which leaves much up to the imagination. They basically said nothing of importance, which is not shocking, because I feel like it's fair to represent their position on climate change as let's do nothing and hope for the best.
Right.
And all our billionaire backers have climate bunkers anyway when environmental collapse happens, so they don't really care.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So the conservative position is faulty at best. The conservative position ultimately props up imperialist rule, where, you know, we need to keep all these creative, quote unquote, ways to keep oil going and keep the financial markets happy, keep investors happy, because people are throwing their money into alternative oil sources such as fracking. Fracking has never turned a profit. The oil sands are only manageable because our government subsidizes it heavily, because once again, we told you about all the logistical problems with even getting bitumen to market.
Right.
So that's the world we live in. It's socialism for the rich. Everybody else can go. I wouldn't even say it's capitalism. It's some kind of like distorted, you know, like, just,
it's exactly what you say. It's
horrific anarchy for us at the bottom, where it's just, you know, or it's like kind of like feudalism, you know,
essentially.
Yeah, where you live off the lord's money.
Why
so
don't we pick up our swords then and slice
pitchforks and torches? Yeah, yeah, okay, I'm in to
there
say the
like
least.
Like a new king every so and so years back then, right? So
it's about time we have a new king, and this king is the people. Mm. So moving on. We're looking at, you know, and on the show, I try to explain, at least, you know, with a pretty fair analysis of why things are, you know, misleading, if not completely crazy or just not true. So we spent the last 20 minutes dumping on the right wing. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we've, you know, hooked in a few people that are thinking this is a, you know, this is another CVC where we just crap on conservatives. Right. But unfortunately, we're gonna have to tell everybody why the quote unquote left. And I don't know what term, you know, we should probably coin a term for them. The establishment left.
Party liberals.
Well, because it's and it goes all the way to the Greens and NDP. Right. They're also part of the problem.
Okay. Establish.
Newsflash, everybody. The Greens are not so green.
What?
And what color? Well, I guess if you paint the solar panels and wind farms and nuclear reactors. Actually, the Green Party's against nuclear. I think it's the NDP that's a little bit more, you know, open to nuclear. Hmm. But yeah. It's, let's just say it's not about saving the environment anymore with these people. So, the federal Liberal government said Tuesday will soon begin the process of meeting with Indigenous groups who are interested in buying the project and is open to selling as much as 100% of its stake to First Nations, Métis, and Inuit investors. Ottawa has said it does not want to own the project long term. So from, you know, I guess we'll sum up the centrist position on this, which is, you know, oh, we'll sell it to Indigenous folks, you know, nice little head fake to progressivism. You know, we said Indigenous, thus, you know, we're good. But in my opinion, it only, you know, it's really just giving something to the opportunists within the Indigenous, you know, nations who are willing to kind of sell out their land, their sovereignty, you know, for, you know, whether or not it's lucrative. I wouldn't think it's lucrative. I think this is not a good investment, to say the least. But, no. You know, it seems like it's a way for the government to take, you know, get more public money into its coffers whilst also, you know, kind of gaslighting everybody and thinking they're doing something progressive.
Right, right.
What's your take on this?
No, exactly that. It's he wants to the best irony if the whole week was that right after I think it was either before or right after Parliament passed a bill that we're declaring a climate state of emergency.
Yes, Catherine McKenna, right. Climate Barbie.
Oh, yeah.
declares climate emergency and pipeline is being built the next day.
And it's again, it's the whole political play. It's really, again, it's, you know, Trudeau feels that, you know what, I already got enough of a firm grasp on, you know, coastal liberals.
Yeah,
right?
White people, libs.
Right, exactly. People who live in Vancouver. And they might not even be white, but they're bought into the notion of whiteness. Discussion for another day. Mm-hmm. But what he really wants to appeal is the interior British Columbians, you know, the people who live in, like, Kamloops. I don't know. You know, interior British Columbians, they exist there. Newsflash, Vancouver and Surrey, and, you know.
Yeah.
And more importantly, Alberta. He's not going to win Alberta, right?
No, but he just needs to hold on.
He needs to hold those key...
key ridings, yeah.
Key ridings, exactly, yeah. Right? And Calgary, I'm assuming Edmonton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's noting the backlash on the provincial level, right? Like, we started with Quebec, you know, Alberta, right? Mm-hmm. And Ontario as well, right? So it's major, you know, flashing lights in his head. And the saddest part is it's really down to it's a marketing ploy. It's a PR ploy.
Yeah, big PR stunt. It's right. A good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. It's like, why, how could somebody, you know, it's like somebody punching you with their left hand, giving you a Band-Aid with the right. That's mm-hmm. That's literally kind of what he's doing, right? It's totally contradictory. It's like he can't
right hand punch. We're getting punched by economic right wing.
More appropriately, if we're going with the
and
spectrum.
Then the left side, you know, oh, it's Indigenous people, so it's okay. It's like, well,
right.
You know, it doesn't really matter what racial group it is.
Exactly. And as we've discussed, you know, at length on the podcast, on the show, is that, you know, there's inherent economic inequalities in these Indigenous groups too, right? The leaders or, you know, the band chiefs who make these
put
decisions.
In through the Indian Act, which is, you know, a colonizer's
exactly.
You know, legislation to, you know, enforce this, you know, governmental system onto right. These people. So it's problematic from top to bottom.
Exactly.
You know, but this is once again, you know, how to trick those like white libs that, you know, just go along with basically anything that Justin Trudeau says.
Oh yes, we're respecting their territory.
Yeah, this it's some very convoluted, you know, very colonizer-esque way of doing things.
Right.
Yet here we are. Okay, so centrist, right wing, horrible ideas all around. Now the left. So this is, you know, at least in my opinion, not the left wing solution to any problem. It's more of the left wing capitalist solution to the problem. So That being said, we'll go back to the article. This is from NDP leader Jagmeet Singh. He added his voice to the chorus of opposition, saying it's irresponsible for the government to build a crude oil pipeline while also vowing to meet Canada's Paris emission reduction targets, which demand Canada lower emissions by some 30% from 2005 levels by 2030. The Liberal government maintains the 100 megatons cap on emissions from Alberta's oil sands. Green Party Elizabeth May said the plan to invest profits from Trans Mountain into clean technology is a cynical bait and switch that would fool no one. She said, if you're serious about fighting climate change, you invest public funds in renewable energy. You don't invest them in a bitumen pipeline. And there's no guarantee that this pipeline will ever turn a profit anyway. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. So let's start with the Paris emission targets. So the problem with the Paris Agreement. Okay, so Ajit, this was before we were born, but I was doing some digging.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting all sentimental. I was listening to some 1990s music. I was listening to Nirvana, you know, all that grunge stuff. And then I looked at, but of course I put on some Tupac and some Biggie Smalls, you know.
Of course.
Rock and rap.
NWA.
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah, right. I was listening to Fuck the Police, and then I stumbled upon this. Anyway, so basically, in 1990, when the first, like, global warming kind of issues started being raised, you know, what was the number, right? Was it 3 degrees Celsius? Was it 4 degrees Celsius? Was it 5? No, it was actually 1 degree Celsius. Hmm. That was what the UN decided in 1990 was what they're going to do. However, then it got kicked back into, and then I guess at a later date, we'll go into the history of this. But basically, the neolibs, so this is the people who, you know, who are hood robbing, as we discussed earlier, steal right. from the poor and give to the rich, decided that, you know, 1 degree Celsius in order to cut all those carbon emissions and make, you know, the systemic changes to capitalism that would, you know, keep global temperatures below 1 degree. Would be too much for big business, because that's who we're really concerned about, is what big business is doing. So, you know, these people that we discussed earlier, the massive corporate cabal that basically controls our planet, decided that it would be better to work within the NGOs, through the NGOs such as Greenpeace, Sierra, environmental non-governmental organizations, ENGOs. Greenpeace, Sierra Club, they even created some 350.org, which we'll get into another one.
WWF.
WWF, the usual players where people think, oh, they're good, they're charities and all that. But in reality, they're the, I would say, the greenwashers for the corporate agenda, Then somehow, obviously I wasn't born for the 1 degree stuff, but now we're being told, then it was Paris, you know, but we remember Paris, and Paris was not above 2 degrees Celsius.
Not above two.
Which was, you know, two's, you know, it went from one to two. But all that changed was that, you know, all the big states and corporations got together and decided, okay, we'll deal with two.
Right.
Even though at one, you know.
Like 20 plus years after the fact.
Yeah, where one was what the UN decided, but they're like, oh no, one is, that's too much.
Right, too rigorous.
Yeah, oh my God, we have to, you know, not be as greedy. So, you know.
I can't make another million.
Wait, so I only get 20 yachts, but I want 40 yachts. That was Betsy DeVos, 1991. God. I'm kidding, it wasn't, but I'm sure she said something along those lines.
I'm sure.
Quote me on that one. Okay. Okay, and then, so that's Paris. So people, Paris is usually in our minds, the Paris Agreement. I said this, so this is an egg on my face moment, which is why, you know, I approach these topics, because I think it's, you know, not only for me, I put out such bad information, you know, my own political campaigning. You know, the Paris Agreement is not good. No. The Paris Agreement, you know, is the corporations and the nation states getting together and just being like, okay, this will be enough. This is enough plundering that we can do. And even that, no one has come close to it. The United States pulled out. Bolivia, you know, shuts out Bolivia, the plurinational state of Bolivia, for not even signing it and saying, or no, well, that was Ecuador too that said no to it, saying that, you know, we're already suffering climate change effects here. One is too far.
Right.
So, but then, you know, even the United States is like, you know, screw it. Trump comes in. Obama's like, okay, 2 degrees is good. You know, fake environmentalism collapse enough. Then Trump is like, oh yeah, screw it. We don't even care. We'll go to 5. I don't care. You know, that's Trump's ideology. Right. And then Big Green is like, boo, that's bad.
That's bad, yeah.
And then, so that's Paris for you people. Paris, extremely misleading.
Right.
No one ever really interrogates it. No one really discusses it anymore. And that's why I think it's really important to add that to the discussion, where the Paris emission target's not even close. So Then we move on to the Liberal government. So them and Premier, ex-Premier Rachel Notley were really really clapping it up amongst themselves, along with the big green NGOs and big oil. They all got together literally in a closed-door meeting after years of activism, after years of people putting their bodies on the line to deny the tar sands any more resource extraction happening there. Mm-hmm. Big Green conceded, oh, we'll call a 100-megaton cap on it.
Right. Which translates into what exactly?
What, even more millions of barrels of oil coming out of the tar sands.
Okay.
So that's what we're dealing with here.
Right.
It has nothing to do with justice.
No.
It's just keeping big oil happy.
Right, right.
And Big Green is kind of like, if I were to describe it, the environmental NGOs, Greenpeace, that, you know, and Sierra Club, the people that go, the World Wildlife Foundation, Forest Ethics was one that we, you know, caught on to. Forest Ethics became Stand.Earth, which is now the new pipeline fighting NGO. Sure. So this is how they morph over time, where, right, you know, they'll make a concession about, oh, we'll keep, rather than, so the same people that are protesting the pipeline 2 weeks ago that we reported on were the same people, the same NGO that was in the room with Big Oil, with Shell Oil, you know, with Kinder Morgan, saying no, that they could have just said absolutely no more tar sands, environmental crisis is going to happen if you keep doing this. We're, you know, we stand for civil society, and civil society says we don't want to die from environmental collapse. Instead, they make the deal anyway.
Right, right, right.
So that's what we're dealing with here, people. Okay, that's how deep this environmental corruption goes, and how Big Green obfuscates the problem, which is why, you know, I was misleading people, but now they're continuing to mislead people, and I think they need to be shut down completely. Because, you know, Ajit, what are your thoughts on this? You know, I have it out for Big Green, because I think Big Green is a huge part of the problem. I think Big Green is keeping people's eyes off the ball. It's giving them a false sense of hope. It's giving them horrible information.
Right.
It's telling them that things are bad, but things are getting better, when things are actually getting so horribly worse.
Yeah,
so fast.
Right. No, and exactly what you've said. The worst part is they're co-opting our real agency and misusing our trust to, again, lead us down the wrong path, or lead us on the same path that we've been on towards environmental apocalypse. And it's disappointing, and but it kind of hits to the point about, you know, why do we cry socialism? Why do we even cry communism? It's that, you know, anywhere where there's this kind of, what's in place already is this corporatist structure, right? You know, anything which becomes very officialized at a governmental level, unfortunately, also has, you know, corporate hands at play, right?
Of course.
So what's going on with these agencies, which are, you know, decades and decades old, right? This has been going on for a long time, is that, you know, they're essentially taking talking points that we find that it's like the whole creating the reality situation.
Yes.
Is that they're creating the environmental reality we assume we'd be comfortable with, because we see it as a very progressive step forward in terms of conserving our environment, in which it is, but it's not real, in the sense that they're hindering the process.
Well, they're tricking. Well, they're not even slowing it, right? So they're tricking people into thinking that things like, oh, all these countries signed the Paris Agreement, thus that's a step forward.
Exactly.
It's a step backwards, because we move the goalpost from 1 degree to 2.
To 2. Which is massive. On a scientific level, is massive.
That's
right?
Crazy.
Yeah, right.
Then, you know, then we're supposed to feel good about, oh my God, we got some tar sands action. Let's give up on the tar sands.
Right.
100 megatons cap. So it's even more barrels of oil that are coming out of there. It's just gaslighting people into thinking that, you know, that these people, we've left these NGOs in charge. Who elected them? Who put them in charge of what we're thinking? You know, why are we signing their petitions? Oh yeah, they take all that money from the Rockefeller Foundation, from the Warren Buffett Foundation,
which is just corporate money, right?
And how does Warren Buffett make his money? He puts oil on trains.
On trains, right?
That's all he does different. And then people, he's like, oh, he's a woke billionaire.
Or requires massive
one that killed all those people in Quebec.
Quebec, right? And he needs a petroleum to make aluminum cans for Coca-Cola, right?
Yeah.
It's
Berkshire Hathaway's in Coca-Cola.
Exactly.
As we learned earlier,
it's a massive supply chain issue.
It's one big club,
right?
And you ain't in it.
You're not in it. Most people aren't in it.
Yeah,
but don't worry, climb the ladder.
Yeah.
Join the NFL
if you work hard enough. Yeah. Was it Make the League or Rap? Was the J. Cole thing? Anyways, enough about J. Cole. So then we have have, and I think this is, you know, really funny coming from Green Party leader Elizabeth May. So she referred to the plan to invest the profits from Trans Mountain into clean technology as a cynical bait and switch that would fool no one. So, like, yes, Elizabeth May, that is a cynical bait and switch. You know, centrists are dumb enough to fall for that kind of stuff. They really believe in, you know, making concessions with capital that will somehow make the world a better place, which is, you know, delusional. But then her cynical bait and switch is the one of spending, see, this, here it is. You invest public funds in renewable energy. That's a bait and switch.
Right.
That's a very cynical bait and switch, people.
Right.
And that is because they're taking our money to go spend it on big solar, big green, you know, big wind,
right,
and geoengineering.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, you know, trust me, folks, don't look up geoengineering. It sends you on a weird rabbit hole.
It's eugenics for the environment.
But it is, though, right. And now, you know, when everybody is very young and you get into, and you're on the internet for the first time, you see conspiracy theories, you know, you grow out of it and you're like, there's no such thing as geoengineering. Geoengineering doesn't exist. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. We're talking about chemtrails. I'm kidding. We're not talking about chemtrails.
And the Illuminati.
We're
literally.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go by that name.
Yeah, it's, yeah. The Illuminati's real. It's just not what you think it is.
Yeah, it's not cheesy.
They're not really as cool.
Yeah. No.
I wish Satan was a part of it. I think Satan's on our side. Right. I digress. So, okay. So back to chemtrails. Geoengineering. So I joke, but what we're talking about here is the investment of public funds in renewable energy. This is the core of the Green New Deal. Right. It's this whole psyops that's going on through fake progressives and fake socialists named Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I got into politics as a Bernie bro. I'll be the first one to admit it. However, we must, you know, at some point, you know, you understand that you're, you know, everything that they say is not actually true or even helps you. So
half truths,
you know, it's another word for a lie.
Right.
So what we're dealing with here is by putting our money into quote unquote green technology and renewable energy, it only serves to calcify, solidify, whatever word you want to use for it, to keep capitalism the way that it is, so to speak. You know, so what they're going to do is, what the plan is at least, is to continue permanent war. We're going to be constantly stealing from indigenous people all over the global south, and especially at home.
Right.
We're going to keep bombing the Middle East. We're going to keep ramping up nuclear tensions with Russia. We're going to keep threatening China in the South China Sea. We're going to keep threatening Iran.
Right.
And in fact, we actually might have to steal more resources. And from, if we're looking at how much resources it'll take to, you know, and what are these resources being used for, right? To create crap that goes 90 days later into a dump somewhere, right? So what happens to your laptop after it breaks? What happens to your phone after it breaks? You know, this all got to go somewhere. And we just dump it, right? Exactly. So that's what our...
Export our refuse.
Then we dump it all in the Philippines.
Right.
That's the current economy. So rather than change any of that, all we will do is steal more resources from the global south and indigenous peoples home and abroad to build the windmills and all the other crap that we're creating to be thrown away, just to keep capitalists, you know, the people that make the stuff to be consumed and thrown away, keep that in place. Which, you know, to any rational person, they'd be like, hey, maybe the state of permanent war and exploitation and plundering and destruction, maybe we should stop that.
Right.
But then we have people like Green Party leader Elizabeth May completing what she calls, you know, Trudeau doing a cynical bait and switch, that she is doing a cynical bait and switch to people that, you know, should know better, but are unfortunately caught up in the spectacle that is the political theater of these pipeline fights, of all this stuff. I think, quite frankly, nobody should protest for the next 3 months. Take a step back. Let's read up on the subject so that we know what we're talking about.
Right.
And then we can have an actual unified movement of people who actually get it, that, you know, the problem is not the pipeline per se. The problem is what is happening with what's coming out of the pipeline.
Right, right.
And we're taking it out of Treaty 4 territory in Alberta.
Right.
We're taking it from stolen land, more or less. Like, we're not dealing with those problems, right. Which is what I want to see as, you know, someone who considers themselves a socialist. You know, right. What are we doing for society here? Mm-hmm. We're destroying society to keep capitalists happy. Yet, this thing that Elizabeth May is proposing is what, quote-unquote, socialists are going for.
Right.
So it's a very confusing topic. I had egg on my face personally, so don't worry. It's okay. We all get tricked. I got tricked. Right. And we'll be the first one to admit it. But now is the time to understand that we need to do better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One more point about the Paris Agreement. So this is from Clive Spash of the Vienna, Austria, Vienna University in Austria. He wrote a really short essay, which is really good. I highly recommend it to everybody. It's making fun of other green imperialist Naomi Klein's title, This Changes Everything.
Right.
The movie This Changes Everything was funded by the Rockefellers, so...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, the people that created Standard Oil that became the richest people on Earth. Yeah, turns out not so progressive.
No.
Nope, turns out they're not socialists. Who would have guessed? Yeah. So
maybe for themselves.
Yeah, well, they are. That's, you know, which is why they want to spend our money on their stuff. So,
right.
You know, oh, and sorry, why we're talking about chemtrails in the first place. Geoengineering is real, people. You know, I thought it was a conspiracy theory for a long time. Everybody thought it was a conspiracy theory. But now, you know, I just Googled it. If you just Google marine lightning. Right, I forget. Right. I'm going to look that up. Marine cloud brightening. So what that is, if you look that up, is a project, and the person that owns the intellectual property is Bill Gates and Harvard, who own this. So that's the rich get richer. Here we go.
Right.
And the idea is to put sulfur. Is it sulfur? Yeah. It's putting sulfur into the air.
Hmm.
Into clouds, basically spray it out of like a boat or on land, just out of a cannon or something. So,
right.
So it creates these clouds that block the sun. So the sun gets radiated back into space.
Okay.
So that's the plan.
Right.
Then there's the other plan of geoengineering, which is carbon capture underground storage.
Right.
Which, you know, is getting started in Squamish. That's where they're experimenting on this.
Right.
So once again, presupposes that the war economy stays the same, consumerism stays the same. We have 60 different iPhones.
Right.
Yet we still have people eating out of trash cans in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Don't challenge that at all. You know, we're just going to go hack the environment to solve it, rather than maybe, hey, wait. Why is it that capitalism cannot be sustained on planet Earth
right.
without us putting shit in the clouds?
Exactly. Why don't you return it to its natural state?
why don't we find a normal balance right. where people live for thousands of years?
Right.
You know, the Earth existed for millions of years,
so
weird that we have to do this now.
Exactly.
It's almost as if we're doing something that we shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. It's
weird.
Like, you think that sulfur is just going to stay there?
Problems. Bill Gates is a benevolent billionaire, Ajit.
Right, I forgot. He's a liberal billionaire.
Yeah, this is his charity to us, is to put sulfur in the clouds.
Exactly.
Thank you, Bill and Melinda. Much appreciated.
Right.
So, back to Paris and why Paris sucks. So this is from Clive Spash of Vienna, Austria, University. He writes that a simple test of the effectiveness of the Paris Agreement would have been a dramatic drop in the share price of the fossil fuel industry, which is loaded with toxic assets.
Mm-hmm.
That is, a serious agreement would have written off all the fossil fuel reserves that cannot be burnt without heading way beyond the already exceeding 2 degrees Celsius target. This would have revealed the financial balance sheets that are bankrupt. Nothing happened to the stock market because the Paris Agreement is perceived by the fossil fuel industry and financial markets as no threat to business as usual.
Right.
And possibly it is even a greater opportunity for new financial instruments and ongoing economic exploitation of the planet, with trillions come to the energy industry and subsidies for innovation and technology development. So the end quote. So that's the last piece of the puzzle here, is that, you know, rather than, you know, end capitalism, we're just going to create new financial instruments. So what caused the 2008 economic crash? You know, creating these crazy derivatives and these packaging, you know, loans together.
Loans which people couldn't pay, and betting on those loans to fail.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So that's a horrible economic system. Yet here we are doing the same thing, except now what we're going to do that with is nature. So rather than betting on people's mortgages, you're going to bet on ants existing, or are these forests not getting cut down or getting cut down? Regardless, you own a piece of that, or, you know, people creating carbon offsets as things to be traded on the global market. So rather than do anything substantive to change the underlying system that gave rise to, I don't know, the fact that a climate apocalypse is even on the table, regardless of it, of it happening at any time soon. Right. Just the fact that that's even possible. And, well, we have, what, how many millions of species are going extinct right now? Mm-hmm. You know, bees are gone. Who knows what happened to the bees?
Yeah.
You know, nobody really knows what's going on. And instead, here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep war, permanent war. We're going to replace cities with, quote-unquote, smart cities that right. have smart meters that right. run on this renewable technology, which, you know, renewable energy, which the renewable energy is going to have to come from somewhere. That windmill's going to have to be built with materials from
somewhere,
you know,
yeah.
not people's backyards. It's going to have to come from the global south.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to build all the smart technology with, you know, with that's going to require cobalt in everyone's freaking toaster, and that's going to have to be mined by some child in Africa. So it doesn't
cobalt
really
in a toaster.
Sorry.
I'm like, cobalt and toaster?
Well, that's what these smart cities are going to be, is that, you know, all your electronics are going to be hooked up. Well, not even your electronics, your appliances, anything with electricity will be hooked up together, where your, you know, your front door will communicate with your toaster
exactly.
and your refrigerator, all this
right.
other crap. Who even knows if that's safe for human beings?
No.
It's never been tested.
Hell
in,
no.
In fact, Bill Clinton, when he passed the Telecommunications Act, put in it, you know, a clause that basically states that, you know, none of this telecommunications technology ever needs to be monitored, tested, or regulated by anybody.
Right.
Who knows? The safety of it is no concern of the state. That's how great capitalism is for people's health. They just won't even look into it because telecoms are that powerful. There's what, you know, four telecom companies in the United States that dominate.
Exactly.
So
right.
that's what we're looking at. And, you know, and the solution is, you know, more surveillance, you know, more Wi-Fi connected devices.
Exactly.
And, you know, who's going to be paying for all that? Silicon Valley, who then also owns the intellectual property that goes into this geoengineering stuff. So
right.
it's just like, I know it's a lot of information and I speak very fast,
mm-hmm.
but to say that this left-wing alternative is a good idea, because everyone's like, oh, go vote Green. Oh, go vote NDP.
Right, right.
It's nothing could be worse than the right wing and the center, but the left wing one is like scarier because it's presented.
It's a betrayal.
It's a betrayal. It's presented as good,
right?
Which I think is
right.
extremely problematic. And honestly, to you know, I'm not going to pull any punches with this one. Quite fascistic to pretend that, you know, you people, you know, this, you know, climate opportunist gang of oligarchs and people that do their bidding, you know what's best for humanity,
right,
and they're
right.
saving the children by doing this stuff,
right.
which, you know, as we've discussed in a very long-winded fashion,
right.
will not solve the problem that we're all supposed to be upset about.
Right, right, right.
So there's levels to it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's just and, you know, they're trotting out indigenous people to be, you know, the quote-unquote benefactors of this. Which is, like, I think a huge slap in the face of the people that have been putting their bodies on the line from day one in the environmental crisis.
Right. It's just going to continue to wreck
the people who suffered the most right. from, you know, colonialism. I mean, like, they are the subjects of colonization. You know,
right.
They're surviving an ongoing genocide, and you know what you get? You know what reconciliation is? You can own a piece of the pipeline.
Right. Like,
wow.
Good job.
Yeah.
But it's a minuscule.
We destroyed your people, destroyed your culture, destroyed your nations, stole your land, and you will give you the freedom to buy the pipeline.
Right. Well, that's what they do. They destroy you, then they assimilate you into their system.
Yeah. And this, I think that's the final assimilation, is when, you know, we have the people that, you know, I look up to, at least, that are the land and water protectors, that really have some sense in this matter that I've always connected with, you know, and I guess should have shown me why there was so much tension between indigenous groups and NGOs and, you know, quote unquote socialists, and why there is no, you know, real agreement amongst them all. And it's because we're dealing with the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
People who look at, you know, climate catastrophe as a way to cash out.
Right.
It's yeah, it's a lot, but I think it's an important conversation, which I might add is not really being had.
No.
I don't see it happening.
No.
It's, you know, outside of our,
well, the media doesn't want to delve into that.
Yeah, outside
it's not,
of CITR.
It's not sensationalist enough.
Yeah, it's not, you know, but it's not part of the pre-approved dichotomous thinking of big green and big oil.
Right, right, right.
Which I think is, you know, just how many layers to the psyops there are.
Right.
There's really no non-corporate approved agenda out there.
Right, exactly. They wouldn't air it if it wasn't.
Which is, I think, just the most despicable level of, I think, propaganda.
Exactly. And why do they need this system? It's to make us...
They might end up like us, Ajit. That's what their biggest fear is.
They might end up like us. Exactly.
Might be normal people.
Cooperative with people. That's what they don't like. They don't like society cooperating.
They might have to rely on others.
Right.
Like human beings have done since time immemorial. We've had to rely on each other to make our, you know, what started as small hunter-gatherer, nomadic tribes.
Right.
And this long history of humanity, they're afraid that they'll end up like the rest of us.
Exactly.
Which
is normal.
Oh, and it's just so, I have it so bad out here in the first world.
Right.
Yeah, they might end, or even, or actually, you know what? I think they're more afraid of than ending up like us, that, you know, that indigenous people do what they did to them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That'd be, well, you know what? They probably should be scared of that, because I think that if...
It's coming.
You know, as it's coming, you know? The Hamptons is a...
It's going to be underwater.
Well, it's an indefensible position.
Right.
Lowlands are hard to defend.
They're hard to defend. I mean, what are you going to run off the island?
I think maybe that's what it is with British properties. You know, they probably like that one's high ground.
High ground.
Yeah, you
got the highway up north. Like,
yeah, they can blockade
go this
that.
Go this way.
Pay their mercenaries to wait there.
Right.
Yeah.
Pay their mercenaries. I mean, half those houses are empty anyway, so.
They're... Yeah. Okay. A check into society. We have record amounts of homeless people. Yeah. Actually, yeah. The homeless report in Vancouver came out. Record level amount of homeless people in Vancouver.
That's right.
Also, record level empty homes.
Hmm.
If only there was a solution.
Solution, right.
If only.
Right. Hmm. For those oligarch apartments.
or for hedge funds to own. Right. Yeah. If only. And it's funny too, because every time I drive around Richmond, there's just constant like high rises everywhere.
Right.
But none of the roads have gotten bigger, and the roads were not big enough for
to begin with.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, but traffic has never gotten worse. Has not gotten worse. So no one lives. You know.
That's interesting. Yeah.
No one lives there.
Right.
What a weird world.
Don't worry. Okay, your mom who owns the home, assuming her equity is going up. So
yeah.
So she's chilling.
I'm chilling. Everything's good. Just waiting on financial collapse.
Just take out a second mortgage on your home to buy your second home.
Yeah, let's drown in debt. We have global 0% growth, sometimes negative growth, even China stagnating. So it looks like the whole thing has completely failed. But, you know, let's just
keep on moving.
Yeah, keep on going. Keep buying stuff. Don't look down. Don't look back. Don't look around. Don't ask any questions.
Look at your phone, though.
Yeah, look at the spectacle in your pocket. Make sure to compare yourself to friends that have curated their perfect lives on the social media apps that spy on you 24/7. Oh, I don't go on Facebook because Facebook is lame. I go on Instagram, which is also owned by Facebook and never seems to occur to anybody. let's also discuss the article from the Atlantic Council website that we discussed a couple weeks ago.
Switching it up a bit.
Yeah, that Atlantic Council about that discussed how BlackRock, the governments of France, Germany, Hewlett, Grantham, and IKEA foundations have committed to finalize and design a new system for us. And basically what it is that a detailed analysis by the World Bank found that... Oh, and sorry, I should say before I get to all that... the Atlantic Council website where we got this from, the Atlantic Council is the same people that who sit on the Atlantic Council, you might ask. Well, that's all the military industrial complex shareholders, that's ex-military lobbyists and the like. So basically we have the military industrial complex of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization countries, so Canada, US, the United Kingdom and France. Germany and the like. So now the new plan, just if we haven't made this abundantly clear, a detailed analysis by the World Bank found that while $100 trillion is held by pension funds and other institutional investors, these same investors allocated less than $2 trillion over a 25-year period into an infrastructure investment in emerging markets. And the fraction of that investment that could be considered green, clean, or climate friendly was negligible. You hear that, Ajit? There's $100 trillion and they're only spending less than $2 trillion on the stuff that we want them to spend it on.
No, it's not bad. 2%.
Yeah, BlackRock wants it. BlackRock, France, Germany, IKEA. Ironic, IKEA's in there. and other massive foundations like the Rockefellers. You know what can be done, Ajit?
Right.
Whether you choose to look through the lens of unprecedented challenge or unprecedented opportunity, there is a violent agreement that institutional capital needs to be unlocked and mobilized quickly and at scale.
Right.
So that's the plan, people. Spend all of our money on climate projects, quote unquote. Climate projects. I even hate saying that term because it's nothing to do with the climate.
No,
it's not even green. It destroys the planet. So how can you call it green? That kind of defeats the purpose.
Right.
You know, it's just this constant doubling down. Ajit, any thoughts on the plan to take $100 trillion and spend it on speculative intellectual property owned by Bill Gates, Silicon Valley, Harvard, and all the UN Foundation sponsors, which include basically every massive corporation on Earth and government and central bank?
Well, I'm sure whatever they spend it on. Okay, of course that's horrible. But whatever they spend it on, they're just going to try and reappropriate it back into their own coffers in some way as another investment opportunity, right? The same thing they're doing with the Green New Deal, except, you know, this is more of...
Well, this is a Green New Deal, right?
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, right, there you go. Exactly. It's exactly what we said about... And it's the illusion to liberals or, you know, just climate concerned individuals, of which there are a lot because we enjoy living.
Which is good.
Right, which is good. But
that's good.
It's but you're being sold BS, right? That's what the prime issue is, right? It's first of all, $2 trillion over what span of years, right? And
in last 25.
Okay, there you go, right? It's and which is like negligible in terms of like the other things investments get, you know, which destroy the environment.
But we have $100 trillion to spend and we want you to spend it now. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials. We'll be right back after that.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire, Cheetos, fleece material, and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Join us for the very best in bluegrass,
old time,
classic country,
Cajun,
rockabilly,
and western swing
every Tuesday morning from 6 to 8 a.m.
We start at 6 with bluegrass, roots and branches,
then focus on mostly bluegrass at 6:30.
Join your hosts,
Arthur Berman and the lovely Andrea.
We'll start off your day right.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Special Latu Show. We are back. So we ran out of time to discuss Venezuela today, but I think we should end on a high note. And I would like to say that, you know, I've spent the last, you know, 40 minutes kind of crapping on the left-wing Green New Deal and why it makes absolutely no sense and why we need instead socialist insurrection and a real revolution to, you know, deal with the impending collapses that we're dealing with, whether it be social collapse. You know, we have like insane amounts of mental illness, obesity,
right.
It just everything is going wrong. Political discourse has turned insane and violent, and people are just they're living off in spectacle world where they think that brown people are all the cause, the problem, and immigrants and George Soros
just
and all
like
this.
The Jews.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Right. George Soros is standing for the Jews, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have that going on. Then we have environmental class, which we kind of went over, and then now we also have economic collapse where
the trifecta.
Yeah, seriously, all three segments of society are of you know, humanity are really falling to pieces. And what's amazing about it, though, is that people are waking up. There's a lot of people who post about climate change. A lot of people know about climate change. A lot of people are concerned about climate change.
Right.
That, I think, is a success. And as Karl Marx wrote, you know, capitalism creates its own grave diggers. And also what you know, which is why everybody, you know, mandatory reading for the Spencer Latu Show. We need to all go back to the Communist Manifesto because we were warned. mentioned. So in section two on chapter three on socialist and communist literature, part two of the critiques of non-communist program by Karl Marx. So this is socialist and communist literature. So this is on conservative or bourgeois socialism. So Karl Marx shouts out, you know, for being so long gone, this guy really hit the nail on the head for who we're dealing with. So he writes, a part of the bourgeoisie is desirous of redressing social grievances in order to secure the continued existence of bourgeois society. To this section belong economists, philanthropists, humanitarians, improvers of the condition of the working class, organizers of charity, members of societies for the prevention of cruelty to animals, temperance fanatics, hole and corner reformers of every imaginable kind. This form of socialism has, moreover, been worked out into complete systems. The socialistic bourgeoisie want all the advantages of modern social conditions without the struggles and dangers necessarily resulting therefrom. They desire the existing state of society minus its revolutionary and disintegrating elements. They wish for a bourgeoisie without a proletariat. The bourgeoisie naturally conceives this world in which it is supreme to be the best, and bourgeois socialism develops this comfortable conception into various more or less complete systems. In requiring the proletariat to carry out such a system and thereby to march straightway into the social New Jerusalem, it but requires in reality that the proletariat should remain within the bounds of existing society, but cast away all its hateful ideas concerning the bourgeoisie. So right there in the manifesto really sums up what we're dealing with here, where, right. You know, who we're fighting against now is conservative or bourgeois socialism, right?
Exactly.
Where these people are, you know, they love, you know, bourgeois society. They love the permanent war state that we live in. They love the fact that, you know, we have all these consumer goods, but just don't care about the problems that it causes and just how it destroys humanity and also the environment.
Right.
You know, because, you know, if you're bougie in the global north, if you're eating avocado toast in one hand, sipping on Starbucks in the other, you know, who gives a shit about the indigenous people in the Amazon rainforest who are getting
right.
their homes
or
destroyed
even,
for
even in your own backyard,
agriculture.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, all those people down the downtown east side deserve it, you
right,
know, say the
exactly.
bourgeois socialists. Or even worse, they show up to those downtown east side, you know, charities and then pretend like that's helping society. But in reality, we need to transcend that
right.
completely, which is what the communist program is all about, but I digress. So what's good is that, you know, we're getting to this point where the bourgeoisie have now used socialism to obfuscate what they're up to
mm-hmm.
and to really sell it to the proletariat, to the people, more or less, you know, to lose the Marxist jargon, to sell, you know, these people of the upper class of BlackRock, you know, the $1 trillion, you know, investment
right.
firm is trying to sell you green technology, you know, like they're so out of options, you know. There's no, you can't even appeal to nationalism anymore. You can't even appeal to war anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
now they're just selling you what you want, but they want to keep you within these confines. And we need to break out of these. And these are the chains I keep referring to.
Right.
We need to get out of this society. We need out. We need out of dominating nature. We need out of dominating mm-hmm. each other. You know, we need out of, you know, persecuting people because they choose to wear different things on their heads than us.
Right.
You know, because they have different colored skin than us because
right.
they, you know, because they're from a different part of the world. Like that
right.
stuff needs to end.
Right.
That's what we need to be working towards.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, Greenpeace isn't offering that.
What do we all have in common at the end of the day? We're all workers.
We all need to work to reproduce society.
Exactly.
That's just a fact about
right.
human society. Except that, you know, the parasites that sit on top of us that don't work to reproduce society and in fact, you know, steal that surplus value from us. You know, are now offering, oh, you know, I keep all the stuff I've stolen from you, and in fact, I'm going to take more from you, and that way, you know, you can feel good about yourself, but
right.
we're still living in society.
Right.
But, you know, once again, people are waking up. Capitalism creates its own gravediggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as more and more people are stuck dealing with reality, because reality is, at the end of the day, radical.
Right.
You know, dealing with the fact that climate change is real will wake people up. But now I think it's our job to get them out of bourgeois socialism. Is to get them on the real path of, you know, real proletarian people powered movements.
Right. Well said.
Ajit, any final thoughts?
Well, it's exactly. It's the whole thing we're seeing, socialism for the rich, and bourgeois socialism is the best way to kind of classify that, right? And we've been ingrained so much. It's like I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said the problem that I have with liberals or any frame of thought is that it seems that you're critiquing the owners, or you're critiquing white people, or you're critiquing any sort of a group because they're superior to you and you want to be in their position. That's why you critique them. No, that's a fair point. I get why it might seem like that, but no, it's that, you know what, everybody deserves recognition. Everybody has paid their due, and there's no them without us. That's the main
bingo
point. There's, you know, they don't succeed without selling their crap to us. And you know what I mean? They don't, there is no economy without wages for everyone, right? It's what they're trying to do is hold us in this permanent state of decay. Is that where we're getting paid these minimal wages, lower wages, inflation is crippling us?
Well, where you're trapped in your workplace, right, where you gotta, right, you play, you're just a cog in the machine.
Right.
You don't, you're not even entitled to the final product.
Right.
You don't get to build the whole watch. You build a gear inside that thing because
exactly,
you are a gear too.
Right.
That's
exactly
what you are.
Right.
And you know, the second that people, you know, I think start to look around a little bit more critically and are like, you know what, this permanent war thing we've been doing since World War One, I think it should end. Or well, I would even argue since the Spanish Civil War, Spanish American War, permanent war should end. You know, and you know what? This cell phone that I spend all my time on doesn't even make me happy, and I have to buy a new one every single year. It sucks,
right, right,
when people wake up to that. And why am I buying a new car every year? What's up with that? Well, there's nothing wrong with my car before, and
right,
back in the day, cars used to last 30 years. I mean, people in Cuba are still driving those cars from the 60s.
Yeah,
because you know, people are. I hope that just the glaring contradictions of capitalism will wake people up to the fact that, you know, this is not the way that things should be done. It doesn't make sense. It's irrational, and
right,
it sucks,
right,
and it needs to go. Power to the people. We have nothing left to lose but our chains. And with that, we've run out of
Amen.
Time. Yeah, the sermon is now over.
Right.
Praise be to communism and Karl Marx. Kidding. But not really. Come check us out on Apple iTunes Podcast for the Spencer Latu Show. CITR is going to be putting on more awesome programming once we're done. Find me on social media, Spencer Latu. And with that, we have officially run out of time. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Thursday. You have nothing left to lose but your chains. Peace out.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What's this Pilate? He fiddled well.
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Rush Show.